Hi everyone, I'm Grace.
And I'm Max.
Welcome to Curiously Enough. This is a space to shine a light on the shadows we hide in. This is a conversation to relieve the heaviness of silenced topics. Here's to getting honest and getting real, feeling inspired and less alone. Thank you for joining us on this road to rediscovering the truth of who we are.
Please subscribe and share. We're grateful for your support. Enjoy this week's episode of Curiously Enough.
We are so excited to have our first couple on the podcast, Megan Neely and Erica Cedardahl. They are the founders of Two Lesbians in Love. They lead transformational retreats and offer relationship coaching for lesbian, bisexual, and queer women. They also hold conscious date nights where couples learn what they really want to experience in the relationship while also learning the root of reoccurring issues. To top it off, Megan and Erica even host their own podcast, Two Lesbians in Love, where they reveal what it's actually like for two women to be in a loving relationship together, in addition to offering guidance and community. They each came out when they were 20 years old. And in addition to a BA in psychology and LGBT studies, they combined education, including over 3,000 hours of training in relationship coaching, yoga teacher training, and body work. Two Lesbians in Love is devoted to creating a transformational space for women in relationship with women, where there is safety, no fear of who's watching, and creating a relationship you desire without running on default.
And if you'd like to learn more about Megan and Erica, head over to twolesbiansinlove.com, and you can also listen to their podcast on any major listening platforms. Welcome, Megan and Erica.
Thank you, Grace and Max.
Yay, beautiful intro. I'm finally
over here. We're very excited to dive into all of that.
Yes. And Grace and I really want to thank you for taking the time to be on here. And also, it's been so nice over the last few weeks, especially, that our podcast has really gone in this direction of like total diversity. So it's really cool to have you guys on here. And we've actually, you know, we've had a lot of people who've done addiction and mental health and suicide and certain things like that, but we've never had somebody like yourselves who have represented your community.
And relationships.
And relationships.
We're hitting two birds with one stone.
Exactly. But I guess to start us off, I would love if you guys could share with Grace and I and our audience why you started Two Lesbians in Love.
Well, this is Erica. And for me, I think one of the major reasons why I wanted to start this was I wanted to be a resource. I wanted to be an outlet. I wanted to be someone that can represent a group of people that I know, that I live every day. And I wanted to show women what's possible out there, that we, you know, we're not represented in major media and movies and all that. So to give a resource for women in relationship with women where they can learn tools and how to be in a thriving relationship, it was such a dream that I really didn't know could be possible to this level until I met Megan. And it came really clear to me as soon as we got in relationship where we were headed.
For me, definitely agreeing and echoing what Erica was saying. And then also as someone who'd been in the space of conscious relationship training and the coaching industry for many years, I really felt like I would go to a lot of retreats and trainings that were, you know, inclusive and accepting of anyone. However, we were often the only lesbians in the room. And it was really important to us to create a space where we could see, our clients could see themselves reflected both in leadership and in others who were attending.
And especially highlighting that fact that you are both creating something that you're not seeing. And I think that's the start of a revolution. I mean, really. And it fascinates me because I, even just as you were talking, Erica, like the fact that lesbians are so, I think you said underrepresented, if that was the right terminology, just in movies and in culture. And when I really sit in that, it's shocking to me. and yet not so, you know, it's like, we think that we live in this fully accepting society and there's still a lot of judgment and hatred and, you know, things like that, that if we're not around it, maybe we don't realize how prevalent it is. Mm. And so you two being in that community, you are seeing it and you're coming up to it face to face. And so it amazes me, and I'm humbled to be in the presence of both of you, because it's really the work you're doing and the space you're creating for people that need it. Yeah, it's amazing. And I would say that with this underrepresentation in society, I would imagine that, and correct me if I'm wrong, and kind of take this as you want it, do with this question what you want. But there must be a level of acceptance that has to come with it. And also a level of, I need to take action to create change, which you both are already doing. So I'm curious, how does acceptance play a role in that? Or is it just a matter of like, this is how it is, but I'm going to do what I can to change that?
I'd say, this is Erica speaking, that I wanted to, you know, and I'm putting quotes up with my hands right now, normalize gay, like normalize what it means to be a lesbian. It's not this new trend. It's like, we've been around since the dawn of time. It's just, like I said, it hasn't been really represented. So I think with that, I wanted to show, hey, here we are, because like I said, in media, I remember when I was little, just looking, trying to find me represented. And the only time I ever really saw me was in these tragic love stories where one of the women commits suicide or ends with a man or something like that. And I wanted to show what it's really like on the daily being a lesbian identified woman or a woman in relationship with a woman. And yeah, I think that, I don't know if that answers your question, but that's something I feel very passionate about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I guess as I'm hearing all this, I think it would be helpful for me and Grace and our audience, if you guys are open to this, to maybe shed some light on what the reality actually is of being a lesbian in today's world.
Yeah, I love these questions. This is Megan. And I would say I want to speak to the acceptance piece for a moment, just because one of the things that came up for me when I heard you speak to that, Grace, was the acceptance that we've had to create within our relationship, within ourselves, to even have a podcast called Two Lesbians in Love, to host lesbian date nights, to share all over our social media pictures of ourselves, like holding hands and kissing and sharing about the struggles and the joys in our life. It feels really edgy, because for both of us, we were definitely bullied and I would say like made outcast as kids, like even as young as 10 and 11, when we were just starting to have curiosities about this. And then definitely as teenagers and moving forward from there, we've had a lot of experiences that were negative, where we both had to come to terms with accepting ourselves first. And I just want to speak to that, because I know that that's true for so many queer people. And we can say, like, you know, the Pride March chants of we're here, we're queer, get used to it, and we're celebrating, we're proud. But really, often what's happening on the inside is internalized shame and judgment and fear. And so when you say, what's it like in daily life, this links up to it, because I would say, you know, even living in San Francisco, which is a very accepting place for queer people, you know, we've definitely been called out on the street. People have yelled out dirty lesbians when we weren't even holding hands or anything, just because of the way we look. So there's a checking that happens. And that's the piece that I would want to presence for anyone who's listening who hasn't had experience with this. Like, maybe, like when we talk about heteronormative culture, I imagine, I'm curious to ask you two, have you been concerned to walk outside your apartment or your home holding hands? Have you been afraid? Have you ever been afraid when you're sitting in a restaurant and you have the urge to lean over and, you know, kiss over dessert? Have you been afraid that someone's going to yell out or something worse, that someone might attack you? Have you been worried when you're on vacation somewhere that maybe your love and your expression of love could get you thrown in jail?
Oh, well, I got choked up and I have goosebumps. And the answer to all of that is no. And it deeply saddens me to say that. And I really even thought about
it. I'm happy for you. I'm happy for you. I don't wish this on anyone, but yeah, it's a reality.
When I'm hearing all this, it makes me think of the privilege aspect in all this. And you kind of, for me, just living day-to-day life, like, I don't take that into consideration when I'm out and about. Like, those aren't the thoughts that go through my head. I'm just kind of living my own life, and I have this privilege. And unfortunately, because of my sexuality, like, I'm accepted, and it just kind of comes naturally. And I don't have this worry or, like, am I going to be judged or will I feel shame? Like, it just isn't there. And I guess hearing all that, it's like, it really, I guess what I'm just cycling around, like, I'm very privileged. Yeah. And I don't take the time to sit in that. Yeah. And to think about, like, other people, and do they have the same privileges as I do?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I would even say, like, if I were to see a homosexual couple engaging in holding hands or kissing, or just, like, across from me at the restaurant, I'm very accepting of all kinds of love. So that doesn't cross my mind. I would never say anything hateful. I don't cross judgment. I love when I see it, because it's like, yes, you've stepped into who you are, and you're out here showing that and doing that. But it's fascinating, and like I said already, saddening to me to hear that at some level there is going to be fear in some, if not most, couples. Even if we don't think that when we see, say, you guys sitting down at a restaurant, you know, kissing over dessert, I don't think that. So that's fascinating to me. I feel like we're on a tangent just because we haven't talked about this ever with anyone. But that would lead me to kind of say, the work that you both are doing is creating support for women-to-women relationships. But what other support is there for relationships in the LGBTQ community that you found helpful in your journey, or that you intertwine with the work that you do?
Or, like, really part of why we created this is because we didn't see anything that was available. We see lots of amazing relationship teachers who, you know, like, our mentors, Gay and Katie Hendricks, have definitely welcomed us. And, you know, we've been to couples workshops and trainings, and we're totally included and welcomed, but it's not specific. Like, these kind of issues that we're talking about don't come up because they're not the issues of other people. I mean, one of the reasons we created the retreats that we do is because we wanted to create a safe space where people could go for a week to a retreat center and know what it's like to be the majority, to be the norm, to not have to look over to their shoulder, to let go of all that armor and see what comes up when they're not armored, and then do their deep relationship work at the same time. But we haven't experienced that ourselves out in the world. So that's where I think, you know, we're all activists and change makers, because when any of us see something that's not happening, we get to decide how to create it and what actions to take. And that's what I definitely see in both of you, Grace and Max, having this conversation, being willing to talk about privilege, to open up the space, to speak about these edgy topics that people aren't discussing because they're worried about saying the wrong thing or, you know, stepping on toes, just speaking about it and letting it be an open book and dialogue. And I think that's so valuable what you two are creating. Mm.
Well, thank you. And I think backing up, I should have maybe rephrased the question, because I knew that you both started it, Two Lesbians in Love, because of the lack of resources. But I guess I wouldn't rephrase it. I was just curious if there was anything else that you kind of incorporate. But that's even more incredible. Right. You're like, I don't know, like, blank page. Here we go. Like, right. This is, no one's done it before.
And rather than just kind of sit around and be like, well, you know, someone else will start it, or someone else will create some sort of group or program. It's like, no, like, it's our time to do this.
If you acknowledge it, it's your responsibility almost.
And I think, you know, Grace and I, a big reason why we're doing what we're doing is because, you know, we've been through a lot in our journeys with mental health and addiction and a whole bunch of other stuff. And we know that this kind of stuff that we're doing would have been extremely valuable in the early part of our recovery and our journey. And I think you guys would probably agree too, like maybe, you know, rewind back
of accepting yourself
5-10 years ago, if there was a program like this, how helpful that.
Yeah, because I think too, and then I'll let Max kind of take over, but I just wanted to say, you know, when I think Megan, you said something like, you know, what we're doing here is so crucial. And I think just to note that, like, when the word privilege comes up, or when you asked us that question, I wasn't comfortable, you know, I was very uncomfortable. And I think that's what's cool about these conversations is, like, some people don't realize how uncomfortable it can get. And yet that's where we grow. And that's
absolutely
all of this. And
yeah,
if I don't admit that, then it seems like we're just going through the motions, when it's like, it's super uncomfortable to accept being straight and white, because what does that mean? You know, and I don't get to talk about that. Just like you guys were saying, like, where do I go to talk about that? Well, I can't just like strike up a conversation and be like, what do you think about being white and privileged? You know, it's a little scary out there. So,
well, honestly, this is something, we're changing directions a little bit, but since we talked a few weeks ago, and it was so great to have that chat with you guys, our dogs met, it was a great interaction. but both you guys brought up this term, internalized homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
And I really in the moment wanted to ask you what that meant, but we just kept talking. But I would love if you guys could expand on that and maybe dive a little bit deeper into what that means.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've kind of grazed across it already today. But this experience of internalized homophobia, internalized shame, is something that is quite prevalent in the LGBT community because of the way that the world is set up. It's catered to what we've been talking about, heteronormative ideals. So unless you grew up in a family that was completely 100% supportive of who you are, that you grew up in a community that was 100% supportive of who you are, and you saw yourself represented in movies and media, and they told you that you were okay, you probably have some sort of internalized homophobia. And that reality doesn't happen to a lot of people. I want to meet them if that is so. So part of our unique journey of being a queer person is coming to terms with, we live in a world where our love is either demonized or over-sexualized or not honored, or we're denied rights. We can't adopt children, or our license, you know, for marriage is turned down. It's like, these are realities. And the world can tell us these things, and we may internalize those beliefs and not even realize that they're there. And for me, I know personally, I did not want to face this part of myself. I just wanted to go straight to the high consciousness, like, I'm good, I'm doing the work, I'm out there. And I realized it was actually at a workshop where I saw another lesbian identified woman share her experience with internalized homophobia. And that's when it really hit me. And I was like, oh my God, this is what's been going on in my life. And I saw how it had permeated into every relationship in my life. It affected the jobs I took or didn't take, the intimacy I shared or didn't share. It was everywhere and everything. And that's why we want to talk about this, is because I don't know if a lot of us are talking about it, because we don't want to admit it. That word homophobia can have such a stigma. We don't want to, you know, so being able to embrace it and be like, hey, it's okay that you have this. There's nothing wrong with you and these thoughts you've had. And then with our skills and our coaching and the wonderful things we do to embody acceptance and self-love, we can transform these so you can have a really incredible, juicy life and love who you are and love your uniqueness.
When you're speaking about what it's like growing up, when you're talking about the parenting or the community or the movies or even looking at other couples or the laws, I mean, just all of this, I'm really trying my very best to put myself in your shoes. And the thing I feel is like, what is to be lesbian? How do I do that if I have never seen it or have never been told what that is? It's kind of like you have this intuition that when you're a kid, you want to help people, but you've never seen anybody help someone else. So you don't know what that looks like. And I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what comes up for me. And I don't really know how to even phrase the question, but how do you even begin to unravel that? And I'm assuming it's a lot of internal work, connecting with other people that are in your position or have been. But yeah, that's just what kind of came up for me.
Yeah, I can definitely speak to some of that. And I also wanted to give a couple specific examples for listeners who, like yourself, might be, you know, trying to try this on and see what would it be like. And so, you know, I, like Erica, didn't recognize that I had this. I didn't want, you know, I wanted to be out and proud. And I'm like, no, I'm, you know, I celebrate who I am. And that was definitely how I was operating publicly. And then I would notice, especially when we started dating, I would, you know, be in, you know, like the restaurant example, like we'd be having a sweet moment and my impulse would be to lean over and give her a kiss. And then I would catch myself and I would have this thought like, oh, I don't know if that's welcome here. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know if that's appropriate here, but I was seeing lots of other people being romantic and connected, but I had more of a concern for making other people comfortable than really being comfortable myself with who I was. So that would be one way. That was the first way I started to catch it. And I started to have to retrain myself. So for anyone listening who is, you know, maybe just coming out or you're just recognizing this aspect in yourself, that would be a first step to start recognize, oh, any moments where you're really monitoring yourself to make others comfortable, make others feel okay, fit in more, and trying on what would it be like if you were really being yourself and being authentic and letting yourself be expressed, and then you risked, you know, in a safe environment, of course, not, you know, risking in the, you know, dark alley kind of environment, but risking within a safe environment, just being yourself, sharing authentically, and seeing what would come from that. And there's always this fear, especially for queer people, that our families won't accept us, that we'll lose friends. And, you know, that can be a huge challenge, really difficult, of course. And at the same time, what does it mean if it's false acceptance? When you're going around living your life thinking, oh, my parents really love me and accept me, and my sister does, or my, you know, my friends, my coworkers, but they don't really know this huge part of who you are and what you're going through. I know it's a lot riskier to let people in on your world and who you are, but it also creates so much more depth of connection. And I want to speak to this piece of then what could someone do, which is what it sounded like you were asking, Grace, like what could someone do who is straight and, you know, maybe you're seeing maybe even a child, like parents listening, and they think, oh, maybe my child is gay. And, you know, we've heard lots of people ask us questions. We've definitely had parents asking us these questions too. Like, I think my child is gay, so I'm just going to be really supportive and loving and not mention it. And it's not for you to tell them, hey, I think you're gay. Like, that's not necessarily the best way either, because they might be like, no, you know, how could you say that? Because if someone's not out yet, they're not just going to be like, oh, you're right, immediately. But I would say it's more a matter of opening up the space. So for instance, I hear this all the time. people are at a family gathering and there's a teenager in the room and it's a male. And, oh, do you have a girlfriend yet? That's heteronormative. So changing language to, are you in a relationship? Or do you have a boyfriend or a girlfriend? That's welcoming. That's showing you're a safe space without saying, oh, I think that you might be gay or anything. Just those simple changes of language and, you know, doing that, you know, as adults too, when, you know, are you dating anybody? I know when I first was coming out and I was dating the first woman, I'm thinking back here, the first woman that I was with, and I would go into work and people would be talking about dates that they went on. And I always would say like, oh yeah, I went out last night and we had a lot of fun and they love having sushi too. And we went bowling and, you know, I just love hanging around them. So you notice I'm not revealing. And I remember feeling sweaty and uncomfortable and like, oh my God, at some point I'm going to slip up and I'm going to say that I was out on a date with a woman. Mm-hmm. And those kind of fears. So just knowing when someone's saying like something so simple like that, of just making it an open, inclusive space where you mention, and we're in a time of non-binary also recognition. So I want to speak to that, that there's a lot of people who are identifying as they, them, and not even, you know, as man or woman. And so you can just make it inclusive by saying like, hey, were you, are you dating anybody? Or, are you in love? Or those kind of conversations that don't have to be about gender.
Great stuff that I'm even learning. And I think too, the first thing I thought of was even just with non-binary, that I've been tripped up before and said, you know, she, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, someone will correct me and they'll say, no, it's they. And so in this world of constant change and people stepping into who they want to be, I just am saying this to even remind myself or anyone listening that it's okay to slip up, but if you can catch yourself and admit that, oh, I said that the way that you don't say that, and I'd like to respect you and correct myself. Like, that's awesome. That's all we need, because we've been living a certain way. And even, I guess, like, I'm thinking of people my parents' age and older that didn't grow up like that. And so their language is different. And like you said, changing our language and admitting when we slip up.
Oh my gosh. And it's been not just our parents' generation. We've been in a binary world for, I don't even know how long, you know, good and bad and black and white. And, you know, there's so many binaries. So it is going to take a minute for us to adjust and, you know, expand into the non-binary world.
Absolutely. I'm sitting here like blown away in a good way. And in a way of like, wow, like, I have so much to learn. And I say that in a way that, like, you know, this is an area where I want to be educated and I want to be teachable, but there's, you know, there's this language barrier that you guys were talking about, and there's a lot of changes that are taking place. And I'm so grateful that both you guys have been able to come on and just share this truth. And I'm like blown away. I'm just sitting on the chair right now. Like, oh my gosh.
I think that's amazing, because you're in a total expansive place. And I think that's such a powerful place to be in, rather than making yourself wrong for all the times that you didn't have the right language or you didn't know. It's a place of wonder and curiosity. And that's such an important place to be for transformation and change in the world.
Right. And I spent some time down in Tennessee, and the South is great. Love it. But there, you know, there's a culture down there, and I came across some people who I eventually became friends with. And like, when certain, you know, new media or new topics would come up, like in our culture, and 4 or 5 years ago when I was down there, LGBTQ was really starting to make some headlines. I saw a lot of people kind of just give up, in a sense of like, well, I don't really know much about that community, and there's so much to learn, and they use all these different terms and language. And I'm saying all this to say that, like, really all that needs to happen is a conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, just in the 30 minutes that we've been talking, how much I have learned, mm-hmm. and how much awareness I've gained just from listening. Like, I didn't have to, like, go out there and try to figure everything out and read all these books. You know, like, all it takes is a conversation, mm-hmm. and you learn so much.
And that, I think, too, as a side note, conversations don't have to happen around those headlines and stuff, because most of them are misleading depending on who wrote them.
For sure.
Which sucks, but having conversations just with human beings.
And I've been wanting to ask you guys this question. You've been bringing it up here and there in your responses, but just what are your thoughts and your experience with gender roles? I know gender is getting thrown out here in our conversation, but just what does that, I guess, look like?
Ooh, I love this. That's a good question. Yeah, because it's interesting, because technically we are both women, born women, so we are sexed as women. Yet I feel very fluid in my gender, and I think gender can be this elusive unicorn because so much of it is an internal process. It's hard for us to explain something that's happening within us. And I know for me, this past couple years has really been a journey in accepting that I am a woman who is gender fluid, and I present more masculine. Like, I love to wear ties. I feel good in men's pants. Again, I'm putting quotes because they're just pants. And the thing is I am tender. I cry. And, you know, there's kind of this stigma, I think, that we're breaking through it. But, you know, masculine presenting women, I believe in a culture we've had to kind of man up to be who we are, to be a woman, loving a woman. And for me, I feel really strongly about breaking all of that stigma so I can show up and be in my tie and cry and laugh and love sparkles and do all the things, because I just want to be who I am. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is always evolving and transforming. And I know too, Megan and I, like, she's more femme presenting, and I'll let her speak to her experience, but there's a lot of ways in which she carries this energy that's very go-getter and what we've kind of deemed masculine energy. And sometimes I'm crying in her lap and she's holding me. So I think for us, it's really a journey of experiencing the fluidity of life and the fluidity of love and the fluidity of connection, and not letting our clothes determine how we react in life and how we respond to life.
Yeah, I can speak to the feminine side, and in, you know, definitely in queer culture, there are terms and labels that have been used throughout history to identify our different representations. So butch is the most known one for a woman who chooses to present as more masculine. There's a lot of different gradients of that, but I'll just stick with a couple labels right now for clarity. So butch, and then femme is a woman who loves women, who presents as very feminine in quotations. And I've been really exploring this a lot lately, this idea of what is feminine and what is masculine. And when I notice, I feel angry when I hear people saying, like, oh, the masculine way is to be an achiever and to be goal-oriented and to be in action and creating something. And then the feminine is really receptive and in flow. And yeah, more like, yeah, this fluid, receptive, relaxed, like reclined, someone's feeding her grapes sort of image. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I present, like Erica was saying, I love lace and silk and fishnets and, you know, all these super feminine things. And I've always been goal-oriented. I've always been achievement-oriented and driven and focused and clear. And yes, I use my intuition, and I believe in taking bubble baths and being receptive. And I bet men do too, if there's permission. Right? That's the other side. Like, I've often thought, like, how hard would it be to grow up as a man and have people telling you to man up and don't cry? Boys don't cry. Like, what? You don't have feelings? Like, that's just not, I don't understand. Like, we all have those feelings. So these ideas that we put on ourselves, on children, of who you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to like Erica was speaking about, like men's pants in quotations, that's just a certain style. Like, I like my pants really tight and I buy them in the women's department, and she likes her pants looser and a different cut and she buys them in the men's department. Why do we have labels for where we buy our clothes? Why don't we just get to choose what we like?
Yeah.
Hallelujah. So,
yeah. So the interview's so, over.
Yeah, seriously. It's so simple.
Yeah. And, you know, Max and I have been doing some work just around our business and just like internal work. And within that, we're learning a lot about energy. And I love that you brought that up, Erica. And that is something we're new to, and specifically more in a spiritual sense. But I'm just going to bring it back to just like, yeah, just the term energy. So anyone that's listening, like, whatever you think energy is, cool, that's fine. But Max is actually represents, quote unquote, more feminine energy. And I embody more, quote unquote, masculine energy. Mm-hmm. And basically, which is what you were just saying, Megan, is like, it doesn't really matter. And it doesn't really influence much because we both have both. Like, Max is a dude and he likes to play sports and set goals, but he also is much more in touch with his feelings at times than I am, and or vice versa. But I think what I'm trying to say is that when you feel misaligned with who you are, out of balance or overly tired, that's a cool way to kind of get in touch with, oh, like maybe I need to kind of nurture myself more. And for some reason we've labeled that as feminine, maybe because of mothers or whatever, you know, like that, that's a great way to use that. But when it comes to shopping for pants, we've kind of, we're outdated, like that's outdated. But as far as like checking in with yourself, you can remove the terms masculine and feminine and just kind of gauge like, where are you sitting? How do you feel? What do you need more of? What do you need less of? And I think too, this is a great topic because for so long when I was in therapy, a big topic that came up for me was this, was the fact that I actually felt not feminine. And God, I cried so much over this, and not a lot of people know about this, so I'm getting really vulnerable, but I just didn't feel like I was a good woman. And I didn't know what that looked like. And I had to do a lot of work on that. And I'm not going to go into all of that unless anybody really wants to sit down and listen to my story. But really, what does that look like? And in fact, a lot of it was just that I like to think analytically. And so much of my perception of what other people thought of me was that she's so masculine that and analytical that she's actually not feminine, which is not true. And there was more to that, but I think it's just so interesting. And I wonder how many people actually struggle with this. And I don't know if Max, if you have any kind of vibe with maybe feeling, growing up, feeling more quote unquote feminine and how that affected.
Oh yeah. I mean, for me, it was all based in the media. I mean, sure, I had my buddies growing up, but we didn't really know what was going on. We thought like, we knew what a man was and like, you know, how that goes. But a lot of my information and what I saw was in movies or was in magazines or was in, you know, books or now social media, you know, like I created this vision of like somebody that is strong and very serious and tense and goes out and puts food on the table and, you know, like all these stereotypes,
yeah,
that weren't true to me. And as I've done some work over the years, like rather than putting labels on it, like I'm more feminine than masculine or I'm more masculine than feminine, like this is just who I am. And these are the qualities and characteristics that I hold, period. And I think it's been slightly uncomfortable to discuss that with other men, but I know I'm not alone in this journey. Like I know there's other men out there that hold a lot of feminine qualities and characteristics, and I have a lot of acceptance for who I am and what I bring to the table.
Yeah.
I feel that if what you just said, you had every man who's had that thought be suddenly poofed into a room, there would be thousands of you.
Millions.
Yeah, totally. Millions. I think, I mean, gosh, it is so interesting. I think we all feel that too. And just hearing you say how you learn from books and TV and all those things and the way to be a man. So imagine then if you were, you know, a queer woman or a man or non-binary and having these feelings, but not seeing any of you anywhere. So you have no reference. And the only way you do see reference is, you know, like I was saying, either sexually or demonized. I mean, that's where the work that we do to undo comes from.
Right.
And I think what you're saying is so important, Max, because like Erica was saying, so many men have that experience. And, you know, often what your experience is, and especially, you know, as maybe like a young boy or a teenager or even young man, that could be called, if you were around, you know, people that weren't very understanding, they could say, oh, you're so gay, or don't act so gay. And I mean, most of us have heard that as a slur, right? Like, right. As if that's a negative thing. And so that's another way to change that. Like, I noticed when people started saying that to me as a teenager, like, oh, that's so gay. I'm like, thank you. And then they just kind of like, what? And it's like, well, thanks for the compliment. And that's another way we can change that. And so for men who are expressing more of their quote unquote feminine side, and if someone says that, it's like, oh, that's so gay. It's like, thank you. Yeah. Like, because, you know, there is a way that, especially I think, is gay men have been allowed to access more of that side. Like, it's almost expected. And so I'm sure that if we had, you know, a gay male couple here talking, they would have the same thing, like where one of them is saying, like, I don't really like feelings. And so another one's saying, yes, I do. Cause we all are just people having our experience. And there's these ideas or labels of when it's going to be okay. So I really love hearing both of you share and Grace, this idea of what, like not being kind of woman enough, and that idea that made me think, I'm wondering if Erica wants to share a little bit more about that, because it's a journey she's been on of like, is this womanly, like her way of being in the world too.
Put me on the spot here. No, it's great. I'll totally. No, I think that's great. I think I was just remembering this Queer Eye episode where it's these two women, and she was saying this, like not feeling like she was womanly enough because she liked hunting and she liked the outdoors. And it's like, our culture has labeled that as a man's thing. But it's like, if you think about old cultures, women were out there hunting and gathering, and that was just a part of the tribe. But anyways, back to myself in present day. Yeah, I definitely struggled. I like straddled in between these worlds growing up, because I didn't understand a lot of what the men were saying. It wasn't really something that I jived with. And then some of the women, like, I wasn't crazy about makeup and all the things that girls were supposed to like. And so I really struggled for so long. Where do I belong? Like, where do women like me belong? And then I'm wondering, is it even safe for me to be a woman like this in the world? And I went through my own discovery of playing with identity, playing with how I wanted to label myself. And it's through my work coaching women and being in women's spaces that I really got to see a level of acceptance through this healthy, vital sisterhood, that the feminine comes in infinite ways. You can be a woman who loves to hunt and wear ties and be assertive and be analytical and be able to transform emotion and still be a woman. And for me, I feel really strongly about being a leader in the world and in the LGBT community to show that this is what a woman looks like. And I am grateful. I am so grateful to be who I am. And I know it's not always easy to walk in the world, because I know for me, when I had long hair, the comments thrown out were like pretty much non-existent. But as soon as I cut my hair and I present more masculine, that's when I started to get more of the fag comments. And especially now walking with Megan down the street, you know, she represents high femme, I represent masculine. So we look pretty gay. So our love can be political, whether we want it to or not. It's just, it is what it is in this world. And I think the willingness just to keep showing up and be who I am.
Even just, and you mentioned Queer Eye, which I love that show, and I love what they're doing in all aspects. I mean, of course, it's entertaining. It's on Netflix. Netflix is entertaining, but at a, such a deeper core level, they're showing up for people and letting them be seen and saying, let's look at who you are and let's try to encourage you and love you until you can step into that fully and show you what ways that we know how to do that. And I just want to say that you two are doing that, and any other person that identifies as LGBTQ that's stepping into their truth of being, you know, in that community. I hate saying community because we're all in this community of the world, but what that means amongst all the trials and tribulations and the fear and the pain that I even feel listening to sometimes what it's like to be in the world or to be in your own mind living in this world. I just want to say that there is such a universal lesson that any LGBTQ person is teaching the world, which is that it is very hard and challenging to step into who you are. But you are all waking us up. And I think there's a reason that right now this is what we're going through, because at a deeper, very spiritual level, like, you are waking people up. And I hope that makes sense. But that's just kind of what I'm feeling.
Agreed. And now I think would be a great time to kind of transition into how we usually end our interviews. And if you've listened to any of the episodes, we always ask who we're interviewing, what does the world need more of?
I would say that the world needs more of people who are willing to show what's on the inside on the outside. So if whatever that is, whether it's through your love or your emotions, like, so often we can be reversed where we think, oh, I better match myself to my surroundings, to the, you know, the people I'm around, the work environment, whatever it is, to fit in. And I really think Brené Brown actually says this best, like, we don't actually want to strive for fitting in. We want to strive for belonging, and belonging happens within ourselves, so that wherever we go in the world, in any environment, we feel a sense of belonging because we belong to ourselves.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was actually just going to say that quote and I forgot, and you brought it up. So it was meant to happen. We belong nowhere.
Yes.
Yeah. It's amazing. I know I can just relate so much to what Megan just said. And for me, yeah, just the realization that as long as I know that I've got myself, I can be in this world anywhere. I am meant to be exactly who I am. And I think that's one thing that I would tell this world that we need more of, is to know that you are a unique individual. You are a snowflake, and you came to be exactly who you are. And to be anyone else, the world, it's a shame for us not to be that, because the world needs more of you, of me, of us. And only you can bring you. What a gift, you know?
Very well said.
Megan, Erica, we cannot thank you enough. Yeah. This has been absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I think we've talked most on this podcast. You guys got us really fired up. And no, this...
Well, I hope you continue to, you know, ignite that fire inside you and keep spreading the good word and getting curious, because I think you're on an amazing path, and thank you for the work that you both are doing.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for being here, sharing your story, getting vulnerable, being willing to talk to two people you don't know very well about some sacred topics. But this needs to happen more.
So energizing. I feel just totally lit up with aliveness and vitality right now. And you've inspired me to think how much more could we be having these kind of real conversations about these edgy topics with people rather than the surface stuff.